Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Odyssey Sports presents Big Time Baseball with former Major Leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr. and Odyssey Insider Cody Decker.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Big Time Baseball. I am Cody Decker. I am all the way over here in El Paso, Texas, and of course, all the way on the West Coast. Tony Gwynn Jr. joining me. We are going to talk about everything going on in baseball right now. And Tony, how you doing?
I'm good, man. It's been a pretty exciting week out here in San Diego after sweeping the Cardinals, what, you know, a lot of people said was a team that barely looked like a spring training team at this point, but they get three from a team that came in hot.
You ain't lying. And not only that, that's where we're going to start. We're going to start in San Diego. We're going to talk about the National League West. The Padres, you just said, swept the Cardinals, a team last week I gushed all over, and immediately not even the Padres, the El Paso Chihuahuas just swept that team because the entire Padres starting lineup is basically on the COVID restricted list right now, and they brought up multiple guys to make their major league debut, and what did they do? They beat the Cardinals anyway. Boy, oh boy, I love these Padres this year. Tony, what do you think?
Cody, it's quite a thing here. I mean, I don't know that anybody expected them to be able to score runs. Let's just put the wins and losses aside. They had struggled scoring runs with the dudes in the lineup. But all of a sudden, Fernando Tatis gets COVID, Will Myers gets COVID, Eric Hosmer, Jerickson Profar all have to sit because of contact tracing. And all of a sudden, as you said, they bring up a bunch of guys from El Paso, Ivan Castillo, Tucapito Marcano, and they come up and they have put up runs in a huge way. And they've come through. We've had a couple guys get their first major league hit yesterday on Sunday Night Baseball. It was a good series, and it's got to give them some confidence moving forward that they're able to win games and score runs even without those big dogs. Now, can this be a sustained thing? I don't know. Hopefully they don't have to find out because you get those guys back off the IL here soon.
Let's be real clear. This is 99.9% of the money the Padres have ever spent in their existence is currently on the COVID list. Like, yeah. That is a staggering amount of players and stars on that list right now. And they still figured out a way to take out a number one team in baseball. I mean, you know, everyone pretty much is – it's becoming a borderline foregone conclusion that the Cardinals are going to win that division. They're just going to sneakily, quietly win 98 to 100 games, go to the playoffs, make it all the way to the NLCS, and most likely drop it to somebody. Or we get more of that Cardinals magic that we get every few playoffs where they just don't lose at all.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Cardinals are impressive. And we'll talk about some young guys here later on in this podcast. But there's a couple on this Cardinal team watching play over this past weekend. Dylan Carlson, really liked the way he goes about his business. They got some good arms in that bullpen. I can't forget Tommy Edman, who's really been a spark plug for that Cardinal team. Listen, to me, unless Yelich can get back healthy and get back to the type of player that I think we all been accustomed to seeing him play with the Brewers, I think it is the Cardinals' division to kind of slowly walk away and win. I haven't completely given up on the Brewers. They still got some good pitching there, some good starting pitching. If their offense gets rolling as it starts to get warm, I think we could have a different scenario. But right now, you saw the Cardinals really run into a buzzsaw. They ran into some really good pitching. They got some good innings out of Musgrove the first night. They were able to patch things together on Sunday night. They get the blowout win on Saturday with Paddock on the mound. And so you beat the Cardinals without any of your big dogs pitching. Yu Darvish didn't pitch. Blake Snell didn't pitch. So you feel pretty confident moving out of there. But the Cardinals certainly showed a team that is poised to keep winning as they go through that Central.
And you know what's really bothering me about that Padres-Cardinals series this weekend is we're not talking about the young guys that stepped up too much. Right now, you look all up and down Twitter, and it's all about one thing. The dirty, and I put in quotations, my hands are up and I'm doing the quotations right now, the dirty slide by Manny Machado, which, let's be real clear, I can understand people who have never played the game and don't understand the idiosyncrasies of the game, not to mention, you know, just the little aspects of the game that you don't quite understand unless you're playing in it every day. Right. That play was as clean as it gets. In fact, it's what you're taught to do. He avoided a tag. He avoided a major collision. Everyone walked away perfectly okay. No punches were thrown. In fact, Manny immediately tapped him on the leg. Everybody was good. And he avoided a double play. Quite frankly, it was a brilliant play, not even remotely dirty. What are your thoughts on it?
The same. You know, what's funny is I turned to my radio partner, Jesse Agler, during the game, and I said, I wonder how this is going to be perceived because of, and I put my fingers up in quotation marks, because of the reputation that supposedly Manny Machado has. And sure enough, here you wake up the next morning and all of a sudden he's being called a dirty play. You are absolutely right. What ends up looking kind of bad because of how fast it ends up happening is really nothing more than a guy trying to avoid a tag, the shortstop coming in full bore to try to tag him, and actually as Manny goes down, basically gets taken out. And that's wasn't anything dirty. He's avoiding the tag. Edmonds coming at him to tag him. And it just ends up looking away, especially once you slow it down on slow motion and it makes things look a lot crazier, but it's a clean play. This is not even, to me, a question, although I did feel like that was going to be the Monday morning quarterbacking of everybody the following day, though.
And I can't even keep up whatever the narrative is on Manny Machado. Is he the lazy player or is he the right, hard-hitting, go-getting, dirty player?
You can't
need to really
both.
Decide what he is.
Yeah, no, you can't have both. And that seems to be kind of it's a lazy narrative is what it is. It's the easy thing to go to because he's been involved in some incidents that, you know, if you're a Red Sox fan, you feel some type of way. If you're a Baltimore fan, you don't even think twice about it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of been that narrative. And then he comes to LA and you get the whole situation in that playoff game. But I think a lot of it's been just completely overblown. This guy, I say it all the time, he clocks in every day. You have to make him take day off. But ultimately, he clocks in at about, 155 to 162 games a year. Ain't too many guys doing that.
And another thing on that play, let's keep in mind how big Manny Machado is. He's not a small guy. He's weighing, 220, 230 right now?
Yes.
He runs into him full speed. He's dead.
That is, it's not nearly as vicious, but it's the same matchup as Albert Bell and Fernando Vina back in the day. Like, it's pure just weight, more weight on one side compared to a lightweight in Edmund. And it just, like I said, it ends up looking a lot worse than it actually is. I mean, it's just pure physics is what it is.
Yeah, and staying out west, the Giants still figuring out a way to stay on top of that division, the NL West, where everyone pretty much is in agreement that the Dodgers should be running away with it, but they are not faltering lately, falling down to third place. But you got to understand, looking up and down that lineup right now, it's not the Dodgers. It's not the Dodgers we're used to seeing. In fact, listen to these names that are now on the IL for the Dodgers: Corey Seager, Cody Bellinger, AJ Pollock, David Price, Tony Gonsolin, Corey Knebel, and of course, May. My goodness, that is an all-star team that is currently on the IL. For the Los Angeles Dodgers. You take those players, you put them on another team, they are battling for a division right now. And that's what the Dodgers are losing at the moment. And that's not to say what they have out there couldn't easily just make the playoffs and win the World Series right now.
Listen, this team has been decimated by injury. And I think anybody who watches this game as much as we do can see, listen, they're still in striking distance despite all of these guys being out. I mean, Corey Knebel's been out since back in the Padres series. So this has been a while for some of these guys. Price recently went on. Gosselin recently went on. Pollock's hamstring kind of bit him again. Bellinger's basically been out the entire season. I think he played the first maybe series or two, and then he went down. And now you lose Seager for 4 weeks. They get at least some good news that he's not going to need surgery. But this team is not going to be at full strength for quite some time. And the battle will be is staying within striking distance. And that may be tough because we've been talking about the Padres. They still haven't played their best baseball yet. And so with the Giants continuing to find ways to win, I think at this point, and I still think we got about another month, a little bit over a month before we can start having this conversation. But the Giants don't look like they're going anywhere at this point. So the Dodgers are going to have to tread water. They have the pitching staff to do so. The question is, will they have enough offense, I think, at this point with those guys out? Now, Bellinger may be the first one back out of all these guys at this point. He seems like he's getting closer and closer. But they certainly aren't at full strength, and you can see why they're struggling a little bit right now.
And you mentioned them treading water, how much water they need to tread during this time. Because like you said, the Giants are scrappy. They keep figuring out ways to win. And if they have to tread water, the Dodgers have to tread water all the way, say, to the All-Star break. We're looking at a situation where the Giants are going to be buyers in that market. And they need to use some arms. And there are going to be some very interesting arms available. I do not see the Nationals doing anything this season. So you know Scherzer is going to get a haul. And you know a lot of teams are going to be in on that.
Yeah, that's a good point, because oftentimes we don't think of the team that may not have been in the conversation as being buyers. You know, it's kind of like they're there, but you don't know what they're going to do. The Giants can be buyers because a lot of their guys are on 1 year deals, so they can afford to add. And listen, what you can expect is them try to go out and maybe single out guys that they think they could bring back. Because they're going to have the money to spend. Scherzer fits that bill, right? And, mm-hmm. and if the Giants hang around long enough, you add him to the pitching staff, that makes the National League West even more interesting at this point. But the Giants still ultimately have the trump card, which is they have the most money. They can extend themselves a little bit more than everybody else. And they have a good enough farm system which is really the new economics in baseball is the farm system, because these young players go for just as much as now the guys who got 9-10 years in the league.
Not to mention that, it seems like the going rate for an older star pitcher, just look what the Padres did in getting Yu Darvish. Did they give up some good players? Yes. Did they give up their top prospects? Not even remotely. So. Yeah. You look at a guy like Scherzer, who I know is still one of the top five best pitchers in baseball, but he is towards the later half of his career. Would he bring in the haul that, say, Snell did? Or is it we looking at more of a Darvish-type trade where you give up a lot of bodies but not necessarily the highest impact prospects?
Cody, you know that age is you're considered old at 35, no matter how good you've been in the league, even to this point. And so, yes, the value definitely goes down a little bit in today's game just based on that alone. And this goes all the way back to Verlander and what Detroit was able to only get away with, what Houston was able to get away with to bring him in. So this is just the way the game has kind of evolved. And because of that, there'll be a lot of other teams involved. It won't just be your regular Yankees, Dodgers. It'll be a bunch of teams that can maybe afford to give up some of their prospects, and albeit not even top prospects, to add a pitcher like that to the squad down the stretch.
You mentioned that about age. Just to give you, just to give the listeners just a little bit of perspective on this. My last two seasons, I was stuck in AAA in Reno for the Diamondbacks. I was 31 and 32 years old. I was the oldest player on my team by about 5 years, and everyone was calling me Pops. Right. I was 31. And
just to give you more perspective, when I was coming up at that point, when I was a young guy, like there would be guys on the AAA roster at 34, 35. So you could see kind of the drop off that happened. And I was like one of the youngest guys on the team at 23. So it's the game has gotten a lot younger. There's no doubt about it. And it changes the economics in terms of what the value is at the trade deadline.
And dare I say, not just younger, but also, and I know you and I have not been retired that long, but amazingly more dynamic. The athletes just unbelievable compared to just 5 years ago. It's staggering what these guys can do right now.
No, that's where the game has made the biggest leap is the fact that baseball is now seeking out athletes and they're having success doing it. Remember, for a long time, all the athletes play football, baseball, or basketball. You know, they did everything else, but now you're getting those athletes to now play baseball, and that's why the game. That's what makes the whole situation why you get the outcomes you get in the game, and why people are starting to ask for rule changes is because you got probably the best athletes you've ever had ever in the history of the game right now. And they're not being able to use it on full display.
Well, let's stay out west and talk a little bit of AL West baseball. Let's be real clear. I don't care who's in first place. The talk of baseball right now is one guy over there in Anaheim. That is Ohtani. So much so that FanDuel has posted a new futures prop bet. And really, it's all about who you got here. And they're both in Anaheim. And what do you think? Who is the AL MVP? Is it Ohtani or is it Mike Trout? Because right now it's starting to look like a two-man race, which is a shame because there are other MVP candidates in the AL right now who are lighting it up, but no one is even mentioning them.
Yeah, and this is the thing I said at the very beginning of the season. If Ohtani is able to hit at the rate he's hit so far and pitch at the rate he's pitched, I don't know how you can come close to that. And that's including Mike Trout. And he's having a terrific season right now. But who else in the history of baseball other than Babe Ruth has been able to possibly lead his league in home runs and still be a dominant starting pitcher in the same season? I don't know how you really compete with that when it's all said and done. Don't get me wrong. Mike Trout is still the dude in baseball. No question about it. But when it comes to the most valuable player and seeing a guy contribute as much as Ohtani has on both sides as a pitcher, then maybe even slide into the outfield for a couple of innings. And I mean, no one else is doing that. I don't know how you compete with that, Cody.
Well, here's an extra wrinkle we have to consider when we're talking about prop bets and futures bets with the MVP race. You got to remember who is voting for the MVP. So who is the player that's making the most noise? Who's the player that most of the writers out there are talking about right now? The fact of the matter is those writers right now are saying nothing but amazing things about Ohtani, and somehow Mike Trout has become an afterthought in Anaheim, and I don't know how that's even possible. But since these are the guys that are voting for him, if you can actually see Ohtani maintaining this for the rest of the season, he might actually be the smarter bet for MVP just based on who the votes are. What's incredible is there's other players such as JD Martinez, who's having an amazing comeback season. Probably
he got his video back.
Yeah, look at him, man. He's absolutely killing it. All of a sudden, Alex Cora shows up and the guy rakes again. I'm not saying anything. It's just a coincidence. I like JD Martinez. I shared a dugout with him for a short time. He's obviously one of the most talented guys in baseball. I'm glad he's having this comeback season. And, you know, I don't think he's really going to be in the mix for the MVP at the end of the season. There's a good chance I could be eating my words. But right now, he's a shoe-in, in my opinion, for comeback player of the year.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. I keep trying to preach this to everybody, Cody. The fact that there was only 60 games last year, you can't put any stock into anything really last year. I mean, except the guys that are normally at the top of the leaderboard. Okay, you can go ahead and forecast what they would have done, but everybody who had like randomly bad years or randomly good years, you can't put a whole lot of stock into it in a 60-game season. Some guys would have used the last portion of that season to do all their damage and do all their work. So it's really not a surprise to see JD back, you know, playing, swinging a bat the way he's normally swung it, back to driving the baseball again. It's really not a surprise to me. It was just a matter of, to me, him not having enough time to get it going last year.
You know, Tony, you and I are both Southern California guys. I grew up in Santa Monica, California. Did you grow up? You grew up in San Diego?
I did. I grew up. I mean, I was born in Long Beach, but I grew up here from the time I was like 6 months on. So yes.
So yeah, we're both Southern California guys, and I think we can all agree. I know the Padres have often been looked at as the stepchild of the National League West, even though I think it's completely unwarranted. But you got to really admit that the real stepchild of the entire Southern California area has to be the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. They were a team I never once paid attention to my entire life. Except for 2002 when they won the World Series. But outside of that, I mean, growing up a Dodger fan, and of course, I'm not really a fan of anyone anymore, but I grew up a Dodger fan. I remember when they changed their name to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, and it legitimately irked me as a fan.
It pissed everybody off. You didn't even have to be from LA for it to feel like that either.
Yeah, it makes no sense. They're not even in LA County, let alone in Los Angeles. And I kind of liked the fact that they were the Anaheim Angels. It made them kind of unique because no one goes to Anaheim for anything except for Disneyland. And people don't even know that Disneyland's located in Anaheim. What's it going to take for the Angels? I mean, they have Ohtani right now. They have Mike Trout, who's been the best player in baseball for the last decade. What is it going to take for them to not be looked at like they're the Clippers? And if you have ever been in Los Angeles, you know exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I don't know that they can actually remove that, just like I don't know that the Clippers can actually remove that. I think that might just be embedded. What they can do is win some ball games. That's the thing that continues to be consistently missing, is that they don't win enough ball games. And because of that, when you play in a city that's close to Los Angeles, that's going to be a problem. You're going to find yourself, and it's not just the Dodgers we're talking about. I mean, they're competing with SC, UCLA. I mean, there's everything you can possibly think of. They are trying to put themselves in that same world. And so I don't know that they ever can. They can just go out and win ball games and maybe keep the conversation interesting. But, I mean, the Dodgers just have way too much history, just like the Lakers just have way too much history.
Well, I am a little upset, personally offended, that you went with USC before you said UCLA, considering I am a UCLA alumni, but I'm going to let it go. And we'll move on to our next topic, and that is the NL Central. We had a little bit of fun yesterday. I'm sorry, you can't say it wasn't fun. Nick Castellanos, who is a dynamic ball player, so much fun to watch over in Cincinnati. Do you think he went a little far with the fan in the post-game interview? As me, as just a fan, I thought it was hilarious and awesome, and who doesn't poke fun at their boss? Come on, man. Of course he had the fan come out there and say some things about Rob Manfred, and it was very, very funny and entertaining. And you just saw him, Nick Castellanos, sitting there with his arms crossed, kind of nodding his head. It was like watching a rap video from 1993.
I got to say, first, Rob is a friend of the show. So, you know, I hope he gives us a pass on this one. But it was absolutely hilarious. I fell out of my chair laughing. And the 1993 reference to a rap video is perfect, because he just kind of had his arms in his little B-boy stance and just shook his head. Didn't have to say a word. He avoided a fine. He didn't say a word.
He was literally doing an impression of Snoop Dogg while Eazy-E was rapping behind him. It was amazing.
It was fabulous. And then you know what? It's good. It's good for the game. Ultimately, like, people like seeing that kind of stuff. And he did it with a style that wasn't abrasive. He involved a fan in it as well. I thought it was hilarious. Personally.
I know, guys. I know old school baseball people would frown at this, but guys, this is where the game's going. The game is going to a more inclusive type of world. The curtain is being pulled back. I think baseball and their fans and the players should all embrace it. I think we should finally peel that curtain back and show people what it is we do, what it is that the grind really is. Show everybody that this can be fun at the highest levels. And that was just a great example of it.
And you know what, Cody? You're absolutely right. And it can be done without revealing secrets. You know what I'm saying? That's what everybody's concerned about. You can let the people in and see a little bit behind the curtain of what goes on. You don't know how many times when I was playing, Cody, that people would ask me why I was going to the park so early. I think a lot of people think that these guys just show up at like 5 o'clock, throw their uniform on, hit a couple stretches, take a couple swings, and then play the game. It's just not the case, right? So why not bring them in to the back a little bit? You know, you don't have to give up your trade secrets, but certainly allow some characters to kind of emerge for this game. You look at all the other sports, you got those type of things. So I'm with you. It's something that is going to be a slow process and changing. You know how we are at baseball. We like to move at a snail pace towards new things, but eventually it'll get done, I think.
I completely agree. And you know what's something that's actually very fascinating that happened yesterday? It's another one of those talking points. And you're talking about not revealing the secrets of the back. We saw it last week with the raccoon over in New York. What was it? Was it a raccoon or was it a rat? Doesn't matter. We're never going to find out. The point is, a lot of things do happen behind closed doors that you don't get privy to. For instance, we saw it a little bit yesterday between Joe Girardi and Gene Segura in the dugout.
Right.
We also saw the comment from Girardi where he says that Segura's lack of experience over at third base cost them. That is a very unique thing for a manager to say about a player. If I was the player, I would have taken exception to it as well. But these are the type of things that you normally don't see out in the forefront. You saw it with the Mets last week. It's handled in-house. What people don't really understand about the dynamic of a team, you mentioned getting there early. We're spending so much time together with, you know, 25 other alpha males. Got to understand, fights are going to happen. Fights are going to happen often. I've gotten into it with both players and managers, and we've walked away the other side just fine. So I do appreciate watching Girardi saying it's his job to take care of this and he wouldn't respond to any of the questions. I understand why he got so frustrated with the questions, but you know, I think players have to understand, or fans really should have to understand, that this is something that will be handled in-house. Just like, you know, I've had experiences with it. And Tony, I have no doubt. Have you gotten into it with managers in the past?
Oh yeah, I've gotten to it with Don Mattingly on a couple of occasions, and it was always it was candid, but it always was respectful. And when I walked out of those meetings, I always felt better whether the answer was benefited me or whether it didn't. I just knew where I stood. And a lot of times that's all players are looking for. And in this case, specifically, you know, there's been other little incidents as it pertains to Gene Segura in kind of different stops that he's been at. And, you know, I think from Joe's standpoint, you know, maybe if he had it to do over again, he probably doesn't do it that way. But this speaks to what you were just talking about. When you've got a bunch of alpha males and you're around each other every day, just like with your brothers and sisters, your siblings, you get tired of each other from time to time. You get tired of each other's acts from time to time. And sometimes things need to be said. Sometimes, you know, all the time you like to keep it behind the door, but sometimes it spills out into the public eye. And that's kind of a part of it. Like it's always going to be that way. Every year we see an incident like this and we talk about it for about 3 days because the fans don't get to see it that much. And so it's a big deal to them. But as you said, those type of things happen all the time. I bet you that won't be the last one. Maybe it doesn't happen in the public eye the next time for Philly, but it won't be the last one. I can guarantee that.
Oh yeah. I'll give you another example from my playing days. I had an argument with a coach. I went into his office. I thought he made a mistake managing wise. He pulled me out in a double switch that it didn't make any sense. So after the game, I calmly went into his office. I said, "Hey, I just wanted to know what you were thinking right there." He immediately started yelling at me. I calmly closed the door. I'm like, "Do we have to have some words? Or do we need to fight? Do we need to do this?" Because I'm more than happy. The door's closed. We can have at it right here and we'll get past it. But like, and he just looked at me. He's like, "No, we don't need to fight." So I sat down. We had a long conversation and we walked away in a better place than we ever were in. We were at butting heads for weeks. And right there, that long conversation, you know, changed my season, changed his season. It changed how we looked at each other, so much so that we actually still get along to this day. Don't like how he manages, but I get along with him. And that's what's important.
Right, especially in a season like that. That's the thing is, this is also everybody's job. You don't have to like every one of your coworkers, but you do need to be able to get along and be on the same page. And at the very least, those conversations at least allow for that to happen.
Yeah, well, you know, we've talked a little bit about the young superstars in this game and the young athletes in this game. And we're talking about guys that are just really breaking the mold on what a baseball player can be. First player that comes to mind for me is obviously Fernando Tatis Jr., just a young superstar who is off the charts dynamic on every part of the field. You got Otani, but looking up and down the league, man, Otani is not under, I mean, how old is Otani right now? 26, 27, 28?
He's a little over 25. Yeah, he's okay. A little past it.
But look at throughout this league, we have superstars, potential legitimate superstars all throughout the league under the age of 25. I never even got a chance to have my cup of coffee till I was 28. And looking throughout the league, you got guys like Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., you got Juan Soto, Luis Robert. These are all names that should be in baseball for the next 10 to 15 years. I can't believe I'm saying that out loud, because who has that type of longevity? But these guys are 22, 23 years old. And it's just, it's something special. I feel like the future of baseball is in very good hands.
If Major League Baseball doesn't screw it up, that's really what it boils. I mean, there is as much talent right now under 25 as maybe there's ever been. And they have a great chance, and they come from all different type of backgrounds, and they have a great chance to really take hold of this. But they can't mess it up, right? They got to be able to market it right. They got to get on the same page. Right now, you basically have two different entities, right? You got the Major League players, and then you got Major League Baseball. And if you look at every successful sport right now, particularly NFL and basketball, at the very least, they're on the same page in terms of making the game grow. And so when we talk about Juan Soto, when we talk about Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna Jr., you have a window right now that you have to capitalize on. If you don't, you're going to find yourself back in the same spot again. We're talking about how we need to grow the game and how we need to make sure there are eyes watching our game. Here's a great opportunity, and Major League Baseball's got they've got to pounce on it right now.
So an honest question here about Major League Baseball and the players. I, in my lifetime, really haven't seen a superstar marketed as a superstar really since the 90s. And to me, it was Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey Jr. was that superstar player that kind of transcended baseball for about 5-6 years. Does Major League Baseball want to make these players stars? Is my question. Because, you know, it's always been about the logo of the team, the name on the front of the jersey. Even though Major League Baseball can make so much money off superstars, do they want to open that Pandora's box is my question. I think it's for the best of the game and for the best of everyone involved. But you can understand why Major League Baseball still has some very old thinking on this.
Listen, it's already happening. Look at, you ask a young kid or any one of these youth players right now, they're looking at players. They're not necessarily looking at teams anymore. I mean, you have our generation still looks at teams, and that's fine. You can have both. You can market superstars and market teams. There is no reason why you can't do both. I think it's certainly for the betterment of the game. You know, why wouldn't you want to promote Fernando? Listen, you brought up the 90s. You mentioned King Griffey Jr. Mm-hmm. Look at all the young players that came behind that love the game as much as they do right now. That same fan base that came up on the 90s is holding this game up right now. And that's where they got to make the change. They got to start adapting to the younger generation now that's coming up. It's got to be a constant moving thing. And baseball has just been too slow at times to make these adjustments.
Very much so. But like, just so people can understand the cultural impact that someone like Ken Griffey Jr. has, I wore my hat backwards because of Ken Griffey Jr.
That was
why I did it. He looks cool. He is cool. I want to be that cool. I bought a Mariners hat. I didn't care about the Mariners. Nope. I rocked that Mariners hat every single day because of Ken Griffey Jr.
That was 100% fact. And that's everybody from probably the age 30 and up feel the same exact way you do in terms of that. That's what brought us to the game was the coolness that Ken Griffey Jr. had. And then you had guys who were reaching for that spot. So it brought up their game. Look at Bonds. Look at some of these other, I mean, it made the game so much fun to watch, and you could be cool doing it, right? Mm-hmm.
And what's the thing that scares me about this, we talk about a guy who in our generation, Mike Trout, might be the greatest to ever do it. But that guy walks through a mall and doesn't get mobbed by fans because he's not the transcending superstar that Ken Griffey Jr. was. But it's not that he can't be. It's just he hasn't been marketed that way. And I think that should desperately change.
See, and here's where I don't fault Major League Baseball 100%. You got to have buy-in. And listen, it's okay not to want to be the Ken Griffey Jr. It's a large responsibility that may not be in your character. Everything that I know about Mike Trout, it's not really his thing. Like, he don't really want to be out in front and be in the market. So you know what? But the beauty of it is right now is you have plenty other guys you can do it with right now that want to be marketed and want to be out in front. I don't want to say Mike Trout doesn't want to be marketed. That might be a little bit of reach, but he certainly doesn't seem like the type that is, you know, searching for that. You know, when you look at Ronald Acuña Jr., you look at Fernando Tatis Jr., they look like they embrace that type of thing. And that's what I mean by cooperation on both sides. There has to be buy-in on both sides to want to grow the game. And right now it just seems like because they're on completely different pages, that's not necessarily the focus at this point.
Yeah, well, hopefully that changes going forward. And we're seeing it happen slowly. We're seeing commercials out there for MLB The Show with Fernando Tatis Jr. actually saying to the camera, I'm changing the game and we ain't going back. And I love that message. And I hope that message really kind of sinks in the ears of not just fans, but Major League Baseball itself, because the future of baseball can be so bright if we let it be.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt that there's a huge window of opportunity right now. And really, it comes at a crossroads, right? You got an end of a collective bargaining agreement coming up here at the end of the year. And it seems like there's going to be some type of restructuring. I don't know that they can continue to go about the business of baseball as they've been going about it. It's just going to continue to cause raw feelings, which don't help the game. So I think it's at the perfect time. You're going to get hopefully a new collective bargain agreement at some point, and then you can turn your focus on to really getting on the same page with one another and starting to market these guys the way they need to be marketed, because right now it's not happening.
Last question of the day. Do you think we're going to get on the same page? Do you think the Players Association and MLB will get on the same page and we do avoid any type of work stoppage? I truly hope we do. But yeah, there is a part of me that is very worried that we don't.
I'm right there with you, Colt. I think the one thing that I think about often is, especially in the last 14 months, there's almost been nothing that they can agree on. Nothing. And that includes a designated hitter, right?
There's nothing that wants.
Right. With both sides want. And they still can't agree on it. And so that part scares me. But I did know, I take notice to little small things a lot of times. And I did notice in their first meeting, and I know there weren't any ideas exchanged, there were no leaking. There was no leaking from either side. And that is a change in itself. Up until that last meeting, one of the sides would leak something out every time. And then it would just cause more confusion and more anger. So I think that's a step in the right direction. But as they start changing ideas, if that theme continues to persist, my confidence is going to get higher. If you start seeing the leakage again, I just, as much as I'm hopeful, I have my doubts. I really do.
Well, guys, this has been an incredible show today. I want to, of course, thank you, Tony, so much. I can talk baseball with you all day, every day, and I look forward to doing it again next time on Big Time Baseball.
Listen, if you guys want to follow us, make sure you check us out at RDC_BTB. That's Big Time Baseball. I'm at Tony Gwynn Jr. Cody, what's your handle?
I'm at Decker6. Make sure you follow us both, and of course follow the show, and make sure you tune in next time. We're going to be breaking down baseball at every possible angle. Tony, you got anything going on?
Just doing more Padre games. You can catch me on 97.3 The Fan in San Diego doing the Padre games. You can also catch me on Gwen and Chris, 97.3 The Fan out in San Diego.
That. And guys, you can find me just about anywhere, but of course you can check me out on The Score this Wednesday. I will be on the morning show talking all things baseball. Tony, until next time, you're the man.
Have a good one, Cole.